From now, I will move the House File 3780 be recommended pass. And at this point, we'll say to the consent calendar, unless members have objections later, but that's what they did in the Senate. So it's pretty lightweight stuff. No offense.
Mr. Chair, I think you've done a good job. It's relatively simple. It's got two parts to it. They're technical in nature, and I think what I would do, Mr. Chair and members, have Patricia Todd, who's the Assistant Commissioner of the Work Comp, explain the two technical parts.
I appreciate the opportunity.
Briefly?
Well, one of them is to allow for fast filing of a notice of appeal for the Worker Compensation Court of Appeals, and right now they have to hand deliver them or mail them, so there's time constraints relative to that. And the second one has to do with changing back some language that was modified last session that needs to be able to be corrected. It was a change that we didn't need to have done.
Questions from members? Questions from members?
Sure.
I was worried about that. Representative Rukavina?
I'm right in the nick of time. Maybe there'll be a little divine intervention again, Mr. Chairman.
I don't know if it's divine because it's obviously intervention. Representative Rukavina.
Well, Mr. Chair, I have an amendment to the bill because of a case that we had Representative Simon and Thiessen have a constituent, I believe, in their, which I think it's Hopkins, and one of the public works workers in Hopkins, was in an accident on a machine that basically should not have been driven in the area that was driven, a riding lawnmower, an industrial riding lawnmower, and this person is severely injured, and because of our workers' comp laws, he's lost his job, the city won't pay, and he's lost everything. So what the amendment does, it says, is when there's an injury caused by gross negligence of an employer, that you can be covered I believe what this is attempting to do, and Representative Thiessen wrote it to try to help his constituent. But I think and I hope that it covers under workers' comp laws that under gross negligence of an employer that they can sue for personal injury. So I'd appreciate your support on it.
Representative Rukavina, was this approved by the Works Comp Council?
Mr. Chair, I don't believe it was approved by it, but neither was the 1995 Workers Comp Bill that was offered and voted on by most of the Republicans at the time, I think, except Benny Osmond. So that's why we're in the situation we're in with Workers Comp laws, is because that amendment that was offered on the floor was never approved by the Workers' Compensation Advisory Council. So after that point, when these big, huge changes occurred, now everybody always says, was it approved by the Workers' Comp Advisory Council? And no, it wasn't, but then we should probably go back to pre-1995 worker comp laws, if that's the rationale around here.
Representative Rukavina, I didn't realize Republicans controlled the House in 1995.
No, we had about 15, as I call them, turncoats, but they came around after that. So,
well, Representative Rukavina, this just so members would know, this would send the bill to the Civil Law Committee and kill it for the year. Representative Coles.
Mr. Chair, in addition, I think it might require a trip to public safety. If we're going to be litigating whether an employment injury is gross negligence or not, I mean, there may be an impact on the court's budget as well. I mean, it may have to make two trips.
One would think, which would be much doom and
pass. Chair, could I have the rationale again, Representative Coles? What was that?
Representative Coles.
Well, Mr. Chair, Representative Rukavina, you're putting a new standard into law. And I would have to imagine that there will be litigation around the issue of whether a particular injury was the result of gross negligence or not. And whether that's happening in the administrative courts or whether it's happening in district court, as you know, nothing around here, Representative Rukavina, happens for free, and so there's likely to be a cost associated with this.
Well, Mr. Chair, you know, there's 40 lawyers out of 201 of us in the legislature, and every time you pass a law around here, you put more pressure on the court systems. In fact, in the bonding bill today that came out of the House, I think Representative Dorman only put in $40 million to build new jails, and the Senate might have had about, I can't remember how much. So, you know, that's always a direct result of the laws that we've been passing, and I've never heard that argument used at all, but I'll remember that now the next time I see an amendment come up that if it's going to cause litigation, we need a fiscal note for what our courts
Representative.
Mr. Chair, Representative Rukavina, I have a bill that that I put in and actually passed out of the Civil Law Committee that, at least from my perspective, is going to reduce the number of lawsuits, but the courts decided to put a fiscal note on. I think it's the first time that I'm aware of that the courts have put a fiscal note on to an issue involving civil litigation, but that's exactly what we have here. It's really not much different than the situation I have, Representative Rukavina. I've been there. I had a bill that didn't happen because the courts put a fiscal note on it because of a change in law not terribly dissimilar to this.
Representative McNamara.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chair. I'm wondering, just so that the members know, I apologize, I don't have a copy of this letter, but I believe Mr. Chair, probably Representative Gunther, is aware that the way the Work Comp Task Force Advisory Council works is that if there's any amendments to the bill, it has to go back to the Work Comp Advisory Council. This is jointly in the letter signed by David Olson, the president of the Minnesota Chamber, and Ray Waldron, the president of the AFL-CIO, and I believe at least there is a representative of labor here in the audience that serves on the board on the task force council, so that they don't believe me that that's the truth. I think labor would confirm that if there's any amendments put on, we would need to go back to that council. And that would mean these two mutually agreed upon items would not potentially become law.
Okay, Representative Gunther.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Representative Coles, that makes you one of the good lawyers, by the way. Even Representative Rukavina will say that, I'm sure. But yeah, Representative Rukavina, that's why we have the Work Comp Court of Appeals. There's four friends like you have that ran into problems, and I'm glad we have that as a recourse for people that aren't treated not right. And we don't have to send this to civil law or anywhere else. I urge you to withdraw your amendment because we have a remedy that is already in law called the Work Comp Court of Appeals, and they do a wonderful job, and they have for several of my constituents. I urge you to send the case, your case, to them.
Representative Davids.
I would just, Mr. Chairman, thank you. I'd like to know what the department's position is on the Rukavina amendment.
Coming from the department.
The Department of Labor and Industry.
Ms. Todd?
I apologize. I haven't read it until right now. So I guess my position would be is that it's difficult, like the other people have mentioned, in regard to defining gross negligence and whether or not that can be defined from a civil court standpoint, as well as where specifically it would go. And just like Representative Gunther mentioned, is that it would be able to have remedy through the Work Comp Court of Appeals. And, you know, so from my standpoint, the agency would not support this recommendation or addition.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Representative, any further questions? Is there anyone in the audience who would like to testify for or against? Oh, Representative Liebling.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I just would like to ask Representative Rukavina, if we were to pass this and this bill got passed this year with this in it, would this actually help the constituent that you are concerned about? Because I just wonder if this would be retroactive, and it occurs to me that it probably wouldn't be.
Actually, it wouldn't get passed because the bill's dead if this goes on. Representative Rukavina.
Well, hypothetically speaking.
Mr. Chair and Representative Liebling, probably would not be retroactive unless we specified in here that it would be, but the point being this, you know, the Worker Comp Advisory Council doesn't agree on much, you know, lately of any substantive changes in workers' comp law. And as I mentioned in the 1995, the last time we had any significant workers' comp reform in this state, it was terribly damaging to injured workers. If we were able to bring this gentleman that this particular amendment is aimed at in front of this committee, and if he were to stand up and show you what happened to his whole side as a result of the lawnmower turning over and burning him until passerbys could lift it off of him, to tell you about what's happened to his life, that he's reached under new 95 law maximum medical improvement, can't do his job, that the city let him go, that the safety switch on the vehicle was tampered with so the automatic shutoff didn't happen, all of these things, I would think that there might not even be any votes against this amendment. But, you know, that doesn't happen around here. Where we hear those kind of stories, we used to hear them all the time, and now they've been swept under the rug, and the only addresses or changes and attempts to fix what I think is a terrible system that treats injured workers unfairly is to are these types of changes, which really don't amount to much. Perhaps Representative Liebling and for the attorneys on the committee here, what we should do is repeal worker comp laws and let these people go in front of a jury and present their case, and then, you know, then whether the business has to pay them or the cities or whomever is the employer at the time, I can imagine what the settlements were, because workers' comp law was passed at the beginning of the Industrial Revolution or when it first started to stop people from being able to sue their employers, and that's what's unfortunately destroyed this gentleman and his spouse's life. So, I mean, we can have this debate maybe on the House floor and or wherever, but I just still would like a vote on this today so I can tell Representative Thiessen that I tried to help his constituents.
Right. Representative Gavina, whether you do it here or on the House floor, the fate of the bill is the same if it goes on. So you know,
well, I don't want to get Mr. Waldron any, you know, irritated at me any more than you want to get Mr. Olson irritated at you. But, you know, as I said before in this committee, I'm going to try to do what's right for people and not necessarily what the advisory council agrees to.
Well, if we're going to add this one, I'd have a number of other amendments from my perspective that would improve the system. You probably might not like those.
I know. I think using a, you know, 450 crawler to dig a ditch and cover them with dirt wouldn't be supported. I wouldn't support that one myself.
Is there any Representative McNamara?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Just rather than carry this on any longer than you would want to, both the labor and management testifiers had said if I would just echo their thoughts that they want me to pull the bill if any amendments go on. Rather than have them come down and testify, I thought I'd just tell you that.
Thank you. Representative Gazelka? Okay. Was there anyone that wanted to testify either way, or that pretty much took care of it? Okay. To the Representative Rukavina has moved the A1 amendment. All in favor of the A1 amendment say aye.
Aye.
Opposed?
No.
The motion does not prevail. Representative McNamara, anything further?
No, Mr. Chair. Just hope I can get all your support.
Okay, the Chair renews his motion that House File 3780 be recommended as passed and referred to the consent calendar. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? The motion prevails. Representative Samuelson.
Good morning. He's in last.
The chair will move that House File 3878 be recommended to pass and referred to the Committee on Jobs and Economic Opportunity.
Thank
Representative
you.
Samuelson, to your bill. Would you like to No, that's not your amendment. Never mind. To your bill.
Thank you. The purpose of this bill is to allow seniors who own their own homes that are under $150,000 to remain in their homes through a reverse mortgage loan process whereby they can receive monthly payments to meet basic shelter needs. They may receive up to 80% of their home value through this program. Extensive counseling must occur with the person through a housing counseling agency approved by HUD. Senior Linkage Line operates the referral service. If health care needs become necessary and the person has expended the reserve mortgage payments, they may be eligible for alternative care grants to remain in their homes and community instead of into costly nursing home facility placement. The National Council on Aging technical discussion is, you should have a copy of that. And the Federal Housing Authority with the Home Equity Conversion Mortgage Program, and it has lots of acronyms, should be in there. Actually, people can receive up to $1,500 upfront costs and can be accessed through the state when it is following the counseling and projected needs for the alternative care grant program. I would appreciate your support, and I do have a witness here from HUD, and that is Anita Olson, and she will tell you a little bit more in depth about the program.
Olson, welcome to the committee. Please introduce yourself.
My name is Anita Olson. I'm the single family coordinator for FHA financing for the state of Minnesota through the Department of HUD. It's a long title, but I was asked this morning to come and briefly talk about the reverse mortgage product. It's an 8-hour training. They said to condense it to 3 minutes. So brace yourself. Here we go. A reverse mortgage was created through the Department of HUD in 1989 as a way for an elder to access the equity built up in their home so they could age in place. There are actually three different types of reverse mortgages that you can get in the country. FHA's home equity conversion, the HECM, 96% of all reverses go that way. Fannie Mae has a home keeper, and Financial Freedom has a reverse mortgage product for those with $600,000 and above values of homes. The youngest of the elder living in the home has to be 62 years of age. The elder remains in title of the home, and there are no limits to what the elder can use those funds for. The reverse mortgage works best when an elder owns their own home free and clear and do not have an active mortgage on the home. However, a reverse mortgage can be used to pay off small mortgages that may be encumbering the property. There's always a reason that an elder is coming for a reverse mortgage, and I have an example for you in a little bit later. The elder receives a portion of the funds of the equity in the home based on the value of the home, the mortgage limits, the current interest rate, and the age of the elder. There's a software program that's been created which was previously mentioned, that an elder has to go through mandatory counseling. The counselor puts the age, the value in the home, and out comes a magic number, and I've got some examples as well for you. Simply said, an elder that's 62 that applies for a reverse mortgage of a $200,000 home would receive less funds than a 92-year-old elder applying for a reverse mortgage on a $200,000 home. Simply stated, the 92-year-old has less years to live, so they get more money. The funds can be paid in a lump sum. They can be paid in a lump sum in a line of credit. They can also be a lump sum and a monthly payment, and those payments can change, so it's not a one-time shot. They can go back and change the way that they're receiving the dollars over the course of their life. The example that I wanted to briefly go over with you is a 78-year-old elder woman, husband passed away 5 years ago. The cost of her medications have gone up, the heat's gone up, her roof is now leaking, and she is sitting in a $150,000 home. How does she tap into those funds? The calculation, which is a real easy calculation at AARP's website, In that scenario, 78-year-old woman in a $150,000 home would receive $92,000. And then I took it one step further and said she wanted $35,000 up front because she needs a new roof, she needs to pay off maybe her visa where she's been charging her medications or whatever. So she gets a lump sum of $35,000. And then I said she wants $500 a month for the remainder of the time she's in the home. In that transaction, she would have the $35,000 up front and be able to live another 16 years in that home at $500 a month. The reverse mortgage is a non-recourse mortgage, meaning the heirs or the elder will never owe more than the value of the home. That's why you only get a portion of the equity. You don't get 100%. The heirs then, upon the elder passing away or the elder moving into other housing over 12 months, the heirs then can sell the home, satisfy the reverse mortgage with the lender, and take the remaining equity. Or they can get a mortgage themselves, purchase the family home, and pay off the reverse mortgage. There were 84 reverse mortgages done in 2000. There were over 700 done last year. There were 5 lenders originating reverse mortgages in 2000. There are 49 in Minnesota right now. The popularity is increasing. I brought brochures and also examples for you to review.
Questions from members? Representative Goodwin.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. What's the interest rate?
The interest rate fluctuates based on Treasury. It's running around upper 6s to 7 right now, but it fluctuates. And typically it's the monthly interest rate that they go with. So I'm sure what your question is. So if the interest rate's going up, do they get less money? Yes, they do.
And Mr. Chair, and I know this program is popular in Florida, and I visited my sister down there quite a bit, but there were also some real problems with some of the people that later would then need to move into assisted living or a nursing home or whatever, that their money had been eaten up, and that their mortgage rate, their rate was so high, and I can't tell you all the issues, but if it being that there's 49 people that are interested, or banks,
lenders,
or lenders, mm-hmm. whatever, it must be pretty profitable for them.
The FHA, which is 96% of the market that elders get the home equity conversion, we have it on the books that they can only charge $2,000 up front or 2% of the origination of the mortgage amount. They can't charge any more than that. That is the dollar amount. So I don't know if that would be considered a profitable.
Representative
Mr. Chair, and to Ms. Olson, to that point, I'm a little confused because I've heard that actually closing costs on reverse mortgages are 10 to 25%, and on the materials that you handed out, you have a table, it's on the memorandum in the back from Barb Stuckey, and it shows that on a $150,000 home value, there'd be an upfront mortgage premium of $3,000, but then the total estimated loan costs are $8,383, which is certainly a much larger number. And I'm concerned that we are advantaging a particular financial market product when many of these homeowners actually might be better served by a home equity loan, a loan from their children who might be expecting to inherit the house. I mean, there's a bunch of different things that could be potentially dealt with, and I'm wondering why, first of all, could you address whether the closing costs are, what the range of those are, and why we should advantage one particular financial product?
Ms. Olson.
I was giving direct guidance from our attorneys at HUD that I can't be for or against it, but I can certainly tell you about the closing cost piece of it. That yes, the closing costs on a reverse mortgage are just like an origination on the forward mortgages, anywhere between $8,000 and $10,000. It is an insured product, and there is an insurance piece to it that increases those closing costs along with reasonable customary normal closing costs that even a forward mortgage would have to pay.
Representative Law.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and Ms. Olson. Well, the bill provides some special provisions if you've spent $15,000 of this equity that you've pulled out of your home, but if you could potentially incur $10,000 in closing costs, I'm not sure. I have some other issues with the bill itself in terms of how it works on the human service end. But in terms of the financing end, I'm not sure that this is the best model. And I personally think we ought to, if we're going to go into counseling seniors, which this bill has a lot of provisions about, that we ought to be really helping them look at all the potential financial tools available to them and not just a particular one, which might work well for a particular group of seniors, but really be disastrous or at least not to their advantage for others.
I'm not sure what the $15,000 expenditure is, what that language is, but there is a mandatory counseling piece to a reverse mortgage, regardless of what kind an elder takes out, that they have to sit down with a HUD-approved housing counseling agency that have HUD-approved reverse mortgage counselors, which I oversee and review those agencies. They have a mandatory six criterion that they review, which is alternatives. As I said earlier, there's always a reason that an elder is seeking out reverse mortgage. There's some financial need. And so if it's a small amount, like if they had bathroom repairs to accommodate some disability, the counseling agency also has access to where those dollars are. A reverse mortgage is an option for financing. Right now, anyone can apply for a reverse if they wish to, but there's always typically a reason why they're doing it, and that's why the counseling piece is so important. A lender cannot start a reverse mortgage until the counselor has given them the certificate that they've been counseled of all of those six areas, which includes, you know, other options too.
Representative Watson.
Mr. Chairman, I think our witness knows the product, but maybe doesn't know the bill as how it sort of works quite as well, in that this provision, the counseling provisions in the bill, are all about state agencies, county social service agencies, senior serving agencies. There's a long laundry list here, who are going to be trained only on counseling about reverse mortgages. That doesn't change the requirement of the bankers to also, you know, go through some due diligence, but I'm just saying the people who are assisting the seniors, at least in the bill as it's drafted right now, are only trained on this one product. And the other thing is the $15,000 that I referenced was on page 5, line 24, and that is that it gives a senior who has expended at least $15,000 out of this reverse mortgage proceeds an advantage situation in terms of getting alternative care, not having to pay fees, jumping to the head of the line if there's a waiting list for getting alternative care services, and provides that there is no capability putting a lien against that property if they ultimately require more public services. So we'd be treating these seniors quite differently, it appears, than all the other seniors that we serve in the same program. And so that $15,000 actually refers to eligibility for a public program, not to the mortgage itself.
To speak to the counseling piece, no one can counsel an elder to do a reverse, and a lender could not start the process unless they were counseled by a HUD-approved agency. I was talking to the Human Services about that piece. How do we go about taking our network of HUD-approved housing counseling agencies that do the reverse mortgage counseling and add that component to their presentation to the elder? No one else can do that. So if a Human Services wanted to sit down and say, okay, this is how you do a reverse, and that would not be appropriate because no lender could start the process without the HUD-approved certificate.
Representative
Wafa. Mr. Chair, just to be clear again, I'm not disagreeing with you. The lender has certain legal obligations, but this bill gives obligations to the senior linkage line, to the housing finance agency, to counties, to senior social service agencies to be trained on this particular product, not about any other product that could be available to those seniors, but just on this particular product so that they could refer people to lenders who would then do their legal obligation to, again, evaluate it. But my concern is that we're directing all these senior serving agencies to only be trained in this one particular product instead of a more comprehensive service.
Further questions, Representative Goodman.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'm wondering what kind of a insurance or what do you have to protect the senior if they got a bad lender and
they were taken by the lender? Because I know that that has happened with reverse mortgages around the country, that people have been taken by a lender who wasn't,
being up and up. Yeah. Good question. Yeah, because that's what happened back in 97, and that's why we came out with the underwriting criterion that it can't be any more origination fee of $2,000. It's the origination fee for the lender, all the work that they do to originate the loan, $2,000 or 2%. Because there were lenders that were charging huge fees. So the answer to your question is we have a quality assurance division within the Department of HUD that review origination of loans. So a originating lender of an FHA product, reverse mortgage, if they do anything like that, we have recourse to go after them.
And if, Mr. Chair, follow up, if this is such a good deal, how come it's limited to people that are 62 and over and under $150,000 home value?
The original program with the Department of HUD, our home equity conversion, the age limit for an elder was determined at 62. The $150,000 limit came out of the working group, the four meetings of the working group, based on a chart. I'm kind of going beyond my... there was a chart that clearly showed that this would benefit under $150,000.
Is that Senator Berglund's working group?
Correct.
Who's carrying the bill in the Senate, right?
Yeah.
Okay.
And that's how it was determined by this wonderful chart that they have.
Mr. Chair.
Right. So good.
I don't care whose bill it is. I still have some concerns. But the 62, okay, so this is not available for somebody who suddenly becomes disabled in their 50s, for example. And so that's not even considered. That's what makes me a little bit concerned about the possible preying on seniors that can and have happened with this kind of a mortgage process. And I just want to feel totally comfortable that HUD is backing up that senior no matter what, and if they get taken along the way, that you are going to be responsible for the money that they lose, not them.
Well, it would be on the origination side. Once they get, like in this particular case, $92,000, we're not responsible for their money, what they're doing with it. But it's the origination side of things, absolutely. The HUD one has to be very clear.
Thank you.
Representative Mullery, did you have a question? Or?
Yes, an answer, Mr. Chairman. Why did they have mortgage payment insurance? Earlier you said you had mortgage insurance. Mm-hmm. I assume that means mortgage payment insurance. Why?
The mortgage insurance. FHA is an insurance company, and we insure the lender. We also insure for an elder that if the lending institution went under for some reason, that those payments would continue to be sent to the elder, and if for some reason, because the calculation of a reverse is based on the elder living to 150, if for some reason that the home depreciated, the elder passed away, and they owe more than the value of the home, HUD would step up and pay off that lender the difference.
And is that insurance fairly costly then, apparently, you're saying?
Yeah, it's a 2%. On origination forward mortgages is 1.5.
Further questions? Representative Sir.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. More of a comment. We're looking a lot at the bill on how the bill works, but really the reason why the bill is here, I think, is important to discuss, too. Testifier talked about seniors paying out Visa cards that have prescription drug costs on them. You're talking about people living in the last few decades of their lives having to give their home back basically to pay for their health insurance and the like. And that's unfortunate that we're going to have to spend time here figuring out a way to for a person or a family to give up their home so that they can continue on living. And that's just unfortunate that we're going to spend a lot of time figuring that out and not solving the root of the problem on why it costs so much and why they have to give their house back basically to keep on living. And that's unfortunate.
Representative Surge, I think from the perspective of those of us who serve on the Human Services Committee, we see the baby boom generation retiring, and we see a huge tidal wave of long-term care costs coming our way. And so any way where we can help people tap into their own money so that they're not on the taxpayer's hole, because there's going to be fewer and fewer taxpayers paying in and more that are going on our rolls. I think that this is a great bill from that standpoint.
Well, Mr. Chair, I mean, I'm not saying anything against this bill. It's a good idea. It's just unfortunate that what somebody has to give up is something they've worked their entire life to have is property and their home and their land, and that could be passed on to another generation. I mean, that was something that I always liked about Minnesota and this country, is that you get your parents' house after it's all done, potentially, and you're able to have those memories. I'm just more sentimental that way, I guess. But
it just depends if you want to get the parents' house or if you want your children paying higher taxes to pay for everybody to go on long-term care,
Mr. Chair,
one pocket or another.
Well, Mr. Chair, if my child made over $1 million a year, I would probably like them to be taxed the same rate as school teachers and regular workers, too. So I don't have to worry about that for at least 18 years.
Representative Lockwood.
Mr. Chair, I agree that people who have resources should, when they can, pay for their own care. But I'd rather see their dollars go into care rather than into fees. And for someone with a modest, at least in my area, I mean, it would probably be less than 400 square feet to get a $150,000 home these days, the way metropolitan house prices are. But for someone with a modest $150,000 home to incur $8,000 in closing costs, based on the memo there, they get $2,000 out of this program by the Housing Finance Agency, so it's only $6,000. If they went on the regular alternative care program, they would, yes, they could, if they stayed on long enough and incurred enough costs and then went on to MA, could have a lien put on against their house. But, you know, then the state would only take the cost of their care. There would not be that $8,000 that went to a bank. And so you could actually end up in a situation in which if they went on the regular program and got $15,000 or $20,000 worth of care, that they would actually, rather than the senior paying it directly out of the proceeds of this reverse mortgage, could have it when the house is sold, when the senior passes. Yes, it would be $20,000 less, but it wouldn't be $28,000 less. And that's why I'm just concerned that we are not, by putting together in statute a proposal that says we're only going to counsel and train people on this particular option, we're not really looking out for the interests of our seniors. And it's not just the Housing Finance Agency. I'm trying to find my copy of the bill here. It's an amazing list of mandated assisters. If you look on page 8, they've established a reverse mortgage information and referral system, which is going to involve the senior linkage line, county and tribal agencies, community housing agencies and organizations, reverse mortgage counselors and lenders, senior and elder community organizations, and relevant entities. That's a huge group of people to have to participate in training on just one product. I'd rather see this comprehensive. If I had an elderly relative or neighbor who I wanted to have helped make tough financial decisions about the services they need and the options available to them, I'd want that person to have the full range of products available to them and the full range of options. And to me, this is just really advantaging one particular approach. There's other issues related to the human services things that I can bring up later, because I think it should probably go to that committee.
I think it is going to that committee. Eventually, it's going to stop through Jobs Finance, but this provides one more option. It basically helps encourage one more option. It doesn't preclude and it doesn't require that option be taken. No. Representative Samuelson.
Chair, you're right on that. This is just an option for folks if they would choose to use it. And for some people, it's very important for them to stay in their own homes for an extended period of time, and that's what this allows them to do.
Representative Search?
Mr. Chair, but it's not their own home then after that. I mean, that's kind of my point. It's staying in their own home, but it's staying in the bank's home or whoever's.
So Representative Church, it's just as much their own home is my home now, which I don't own outright. The bank has a big portion of it.
Right now, Mr. Chair, but you're going towards you owning it, and they're going back away from it.
It's that continuum we're talking about, that circle continuum
like
we're talking about.
Cycle, isn't it?
Yeah.
Is Representative Gazelka.
Yeah, sort of to that point, too. What I see for people that have these are people that don't really want to go on welfare. They want to take their own assets and use them, and this is a perfect tool for them. And like others have said, this is just one of many tools, but, you know, some people do want to build up in their house, and they do want to take care of their own needs, and this is the way to do it, and they don't want welfare.
Representative Mallory.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. And, Representative Loeffler, I think this probably is a design to try and get the people to only know about this among other possible things they could do to maybe qualify. But I have a question, and I don't know who of, because my question is, page 5, line 18, alternative care services are available to a person who satisfies the following criteria, and then it goes through this. Are we making an exception from either non-qualification for alternative care or, in other words, are we including people who wouldn't be qualified for some other reason if they follow and do what we're ordering them to do here, or what we're trying to force them into this funnel?
Mr. Chair, Lisa Rodegard is here from the department. I think she's most likely the best person to answer any alternative care grant question.
Ms. Rodegard, could you please introduce yourself?
I am Lisa Rodegard from the Department of Human Services. On the back end of spending a substantial dollar amount with reverse mortgage, we've tried to put some incentive into our alternative care program, the state-funded program, so that people who've already spent some portion of this and satisfied that loan, by the way, or used it up, would be able to enter the alternative care program at a younger age, age 62. And we would also allow them to have more income and assets. Right now it's 135-day eligibility, or 135 days worth of income and assets, carrying them through a nursing home stay of 135 days, and that would be 180 days under this legislation. And then we would waive the premium fees should they otherwise have had to pay them, as well as not make them subject to a state recovery for the costs on the alternative care program. There are no liens on the alternative care program any longer, but there is a state recovery.
Mr. Chairman, that's what I thought. Basically, we're kind of forcing them to take this type of thing if they want to get the alternative care in a way. So I have a problem with that kind of an approach.
Ms. Rodegard, is that correct?
No. Again, this is a back-end incentive. If a person makes the choice to use a reverse mortgage, right, they get a benefit when they come to the alternative care program. It doesn't mean that the people who would ordinarily be coming to the alternative care program have to do that.
Mr. Chair, I'm trying to make the point that we are, in a way, giving a forcing, or an, if you call it an incentive, to do a certain thing just to qualify for this. You can call it an incentive. Somebody else can call it a forcing. It doesn't matter what you call it. I think we all understand what you're doing.
So, Ms. Rodegard, is there another way to get into the alternative care program? Is it going to require a reverse mortgage to do it, or
no,
are people still going to be able to get into the alternative care program?
Mr. Chair. In fact, what we've tried to do is the door a person does come into the alternative care program is generally the county or the long-term care consultant door. And sometimes that happens after a talk to the senior linkage line when people call and say they need something. So a person who would otherwise go through that door and would meet perhaps this criteria in terms of the value of their home, but maybe not yet be eligible for alternative care, maybe just be above that eligibility level, may be able to access a reverse mortgage at that point to do something, take care of themselves at home according to a plan for a while. And then if they should come back to the AC program after doing that, they would in fact benefit from having done that. But it doesn't mean the person who came through the door in the first place who was eligible for AC can't be eligible for AC without
Representative Mueller.
Mr. Chairman, I was trying to make the point, and this is they're confusing it. The fact is that the people are getting an exception to the requirements on alternative care, so it is an incentive to go into this particular financing.
Incentive, but not a requirement.
That's what I said. You can call it an incentive, a forcing, or it's not an absolute requirement. No.
But it's
a strong incentive.
Representative Mallory, it seems to me that it's a very good idea on incenting seniors to take care of their own expenses before coming on to the already very strained human services budget that is going to be broken in the coming years if we don't do something to incent people that use their own resources to take care of themselves.
Well, Mr. Chairman, that may be the case, but there are other ways too, and we are incenting them in one way.
That's been alluded to a couple times, such as. It's a question. What other products, incentives are there to help people harness the equity in their home and in their own portfolio, so that they're not on the dole?
You've got one of your compatriots is saying insurance.
Long-term care insurance, life insurance, we've dealt with that. Is sitting out there. At this point, say you're 65 years old and you haven't bought long-term care insurance and you're not going to have the opportunity to buy it, what are your options?
Sell your house.
Father, Representative Loeffler?
Mr. Chair, I think there's actually a variety of options, and that's why I think that it should be broad-based counseling and training for the human service agencies, for the counties, for the senior inquiry, not just about this one particular product. It may be that some seniors would qualify for a home equity loan. They may have other assets that they could cash in terms of collectibles. They could have a car. They could have, there's a variety of different things that people can do. But this one will be pushed because it puts you to the top of the line. In Hennepin County, through the years, we've often had waiting lists for alternative care. And that's for people who meet the current age threshold, not the advantaged age threshold here. This will also give people who take advantage of this particular financial product that will give them not having to contribute out of their ongoing monthly income from Social Security, from their pension, that every other senior in the alternative care program is expected, based on their income, to pay a percentage of the cost. This would exempt people who chose this particular product from that. And I'm just saying, I think if we want to create an incentive for seniors to use their own resources and to be able to preserve their home, I agree with that. But I think we ought to have a program that says anyone who uses X dollars of their own assets, whether they access those through reverse mortgage, whether they access that by selling the family vehicle, whether they access that through some other financial means, that they should all be treated equally. And now we're going to create an advantage class of seniors based on this particular model, which has extremely high closing costs. And I'm very concerned about, we're encouraging seniors to spend a lot of thousands up front for something to access a financial product. Those same dollars could be used for those exact same services you're talking about, Mr. Chairman, in terms of their care.
Representative Loeffler, I'd be shocked if anyone would encourage a senior to take out a home equity loan for daily living expenses, because the cash flows just don't work. You pull out the loan, you pull out the money, and you got to start making payments in again. So you're taking out for your expenses, and you're also paying for your to repay the loan. It's not a very wise direction to go. Representative Loeffler.
Mr. Chairman, that's why you need to have trained counselors, because it actually will work for many people. The bill addresses people who are taking out a home equity loan, not for their normal and monthly expenses, but also for people who need to make a home modification. Maybe they need to put ramps in. Maybe they need to widen the door to the bathroom and put in grab bars in the bathroom. That could be handled by a home equity loan for someone who has a significant pension. And they could make those payments. That may be a reasonable alternative for some people. And I'm just saying the counties, the senior linkage line, the all the long list of senior serving agencies here should be trained so that they can actually give specific information about the full range of options given that unique senior's unique financial situation. And this bill only deals with one option, and that may not be the best option for all the seniors who step forward to use their own assets in this way.
Representative Moll.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. My question is more technical. Hypothetically, and I'm sure there's somebody up there that can answer this. If my mom or my dad has a reverse mortgage, they take the assets out of the house to pay for their health care costs. Don't they then have a house payment of increasing amount? And then, assuming that's true, I don't know that to be true, I'm more asking, assuming that were to be true, then how would that increased monthly expense figure into their health and human services that they get from Minnesota?
I'm sorry, did you say that if they applied for a reverse mortgage?
Yeah, correct, and actually assuming they had the reverse mortgage, and so they're actually taking the assets out of their house.
There is no monthly payment back. It's to them.
It's coming to them. But
either they get, like my example, the elderly lady took $35,000 out of her $92,000 to do what she needed to, right. And then the bank was paying her $500 a month. There's nothing owed back to the bank until she passes away or moves out of the home over 12 months.
It's like buying an annuity with the equity in your home.
Okay.
So the money's coming back to you. You're buying a cash flow, a cash stream.
Right. And then just follow up then. So then they maximize, and this is just because I don't know. They maximize the amount of money they can get out of their house. Then there's a debt, there's a loan there essentially, right? I mean,
increasing.
And isn't there ultimately interest due on this loan, or is that just is not at all? It's just
until they pass away.
And then
right, exactly.
Okay. Or
they're out of the home over 12 months. So if they moved into a nursing home or for some reason that they're unable to care for themselves, they need to move out, then the loan is called due.
Just so then a follow-up. So technically then, say my mom does this, and she maximizes the amount of assets she can get out of her reverse mortgage when she's 65, yet she's living for 20 more years. Then the bank or whoever was holding this mortgage wouldn't be able to collect from my mom any interest or anything on this loan until she, for whatever reason, has to leave the house or dies.
Yep, and then she never owes any more than the value of the home at the time she sells it.
Thank you.
Representative Goodman.
Oh, I have a couple of questions. First, I just want to say that in the states that this has, that this has become popular in, it is heavily advertised. So it's not that this isn't making money for people. And I just have to say the people I notice in the audience today are people from the banking industry and the insurance industry that are very interested in getting this bill. And it's not because they're out there looking for good things to do for seniors. I mean, they might be, but that's not part of why they're spending their time here. But there is a lot, there are a number of issues here. And I think... I think that for us in the department to dedicate itself to this idea is a little bit frightening to me, because I know that there are problems all over the country with these reverse mortgages. I know there are. And you just said something I think is very important, and that is if a senior is out of their home for 12 months, then they lose the home back to the lender.
They sell the home and pull the remaining equity out.
So if they are, like my grandmother was, a year in a nursing home, but then was able after 14 months to come back to her home, too bad. You know, you don't have a home there. And that's significant. And another thing I want to say, Representative Wilkin, is, or Mr. Chair, is that... if you think they're not preying on these people, you haven't seen anything yet, because I had a group that was actually a business from Representative Gunther's district that came into my district and preyed on my seniors last summer, and gave them a free meal at an Old Country Buffet, then tried to sell them $5,000 worth of fire alarm equipment, one for every corner of their house at 23% lending interest rate, showed them horrible films, because I went to one unexpectedly, and here they were with their little grandbabies burning up in the film that they show. They were preying on seniors, and if you don't think people are going to prey on seniors to get a hold of their mortgages, you said, I think we need a lot more protections if we're going to do this and make our agencies do this. We need a lot more protections for folks than what we're advocating in this.
Well, Representative Goodwin, I certainly appreciate what you're saying. There's definitely unscrupulous operators out there. I don't think they're the majority. They're definitely the exception. I have a bill that's gone through the process to protect seniors from financial exploitation, and that kind of thing needs to happen. And if you have suggestions as this bill goes along the way, I know Representative Samuelson is open to them, because I've talked to her about my concerns about that same kind of issue. But not doing the bill doesn't protect seniors. It might be an opportunity to not only give them some incentive to help themselves and help the state budget at the same time, which I think was Senator Berglund's intent in the first place, but it might also be an opportunity to kind of tighten up and make sure that there are some financial protections. And I think Representative Samuelson would be open to that. But we got to move the bill along, too.
Not necessarily, Mr. Chair.
Or we could kill it, and I'm sure Senator Berglund would be very pleased with that. Representative Mueller.
Mr. Chairman, I think I was just going to point out that this, I just don't think, and I think Representative Goodwin someplace in there, I got lost, but I think pointed out that this is preferring and giving a big profit to a certain portion of the industry, and I just don't think that we should be incenting that way.
Is there anyone in the audience that would like to testify for or against the bill? I'm sorry, Representative Clark had a question, then we'll go to Representative Gunter.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I was just trying to pick up on this closing cost estimate here. For a $150,000 home, it would be more than $8,000 for closing costs? It seems awfully high. Where does this number come from, and why is that so high?
Again, it's very similar to forward mortgages. You have your reasonable customary closing costs, you have your appraisal and taxes and all of those kinds of things, but there is a 2% origination fee and a 2% insurance fee. And those are the issues that were addressed in the bill that to offset for the elder as an incentive.
I don't think I understood the last part, and I apologize because I had another meeting before this and I missed some of this, but when you said they're addressed in the bill to offset for the elder, what are you saying?
The $1,500 offset for origination fee, and that's in the bill, the closing cost essentially is what the bill is addressing.
But I guess you didn't answer my question. Why is the closing cost so high? $8,000 plus it looks like upfront mortgage insurance premium of another $3,000. Why is that so high for this product? I just don't understand it. I mean, you could. I recently actually did a refinance of my house that was higher than $150,000 value at this point in time, and mine was much less than this for the closing cost. So I'm trying to understand why this is so high. I'm talking about insurance. Insurance is separate. I'm only talking about the upfront closing costs.
We had a breakdown of all of the closing costs. I think that would be the easiest way, and I'd be happy to get you a copy of that to show you exactly a real example of a closing cost for the reverse.
Okay, then I guess my last question, Mr. Chairman, is this a set percentage that this bill is promoting, or is this like guess, or, I mean, what's the force of, what's the reality of this chart here? Is this built into the law so that's what it would amount to be? Is that the way it's set up? Can they shop around and get some different closing costs? And, you know.
Mr. Rodegard, is that
Well, I'm sorry, that's not my expertise, I'm afraid. It was really shocking to me going through the process to just see you, but there are certain upfront costs. I think the bill is just trying to address what seems like a reasonable help from the state for people at a certain income level. It would help them pay some of those upfront costs when it's obviously a sort of a low-valued or lower-valued home. If they become a higher percent, obviously, all of those kind of set costs are those... the ones that don't vary by the amount of equity in your home, that obviously becomes a higher percentage of the total cost when you have lower value homes. So the bill would make available $1,500 worth of that upfront cost to the people at the lowest home value, basically.
Okay, Ms. Chair, this is my last question. I understand that this will help that, which I guess goes right to the closing company or to the bank or the more, you know, that's not my point. It seems to me like this is an excessive closing costs and excessive upfront insurance. I don't know why. Maybe the author can tell me why it's so high.
Ms. Olson, could you get us that breakdown between Al and the Jobs Committee? That'd be helpful. It's making a stop at Representative Gunther's committee shortly.
When is the Jobs Committee?
Representative Gunther, do you know when this would come up in your committee?
It has to be Wednesday or Thursday.
Probably Thursday, then.
I guess so.
Oh, yeah. I didn't know if it was 3 o'clock. Okay,
that's not a problem. No. Thank you. That would be great.
Mr. Chair?
Representative Danielson.
One thing on the closing costs is that those have been the closing costs since the origination of the program. And the program originated, I think it was 89. Mm-hmm. So even though we're going, wow, these have been in place.
So the bill doesn't change that at all. Whether the bill passes or not, those are the closing costs.
What the bill does is allow up to $1,500 to offset some of those costs. And that $1,500 would be from the state.
Okay. Representative Gunther.
My question is long past my mind.
Representative Mullery.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Can you give me the rate of return for the mortgage company and for these different insurances involved? I just don't understand why they're so high on this tape. But when you look at the possible loss rate ratio.
I guess I'm not understanding what you mean by the rate of return.
Interest rate?
No, the rate of return that on their investment, the money they put into it, and also for your FHA.
Yeah, so there's a growth rate attached to a reserve that is really good in this example. That shows. I don't know if this is going to address what you're asking.
I don't.
But in elder, that it's not.
I'm trying to get at what rate of return you get, what the mortgage company gets, what the insurance, the PMI. Company gets all of those as a rate of return on this type of thing.
And I can't answer that question because I don't know.
Further questions? Seeing none, the chair will renew his motion in House File 3878 be recommended to pass and referred to the Committee on Jobs and Economic Opportunity. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed?
No.
The motion prevails. Okay. The division has been called for. All those in favor, raise your right hand. All those opposed? The chair's ears are good, and the motion prevails. Thank you, Representative Samuelson. Representative Sertich moves the minutes of the March 29th meeting. All in favor of those, say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Motion prevails.
And Danny Senior, we're done.
We're adjourned.